In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I have a fantastic conversation with Rachel Smith. Rachel is the author of Decongestion and also of Underspent. Rachel is a transport planner by trade and first tells us about the BMW Guggenheim Lab she participated in, where she traveled the world with the theme Cities of the Future. We talk about the idea of underspent cities and how smart cities is the intentional use of resources. We then discuss the sharing economy and Rachel's experience of this overseas. Rachel then shares the importance of people in the smart city and the drivers of behavioural change. We finish on the emerging trend that people aren't talking about enough, which is the changes in retail that are already happening. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with smart city experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Rachel. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am very well. Let's jump straight into this. And can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you're passionate about?
So I'm Rachel Smith. I'm a transport planner. I'm on the Smart Cities Task Force for the Built Environment. And I'm really passionate about people, transport, and finance / economics. Well, basically saving money.
Awesome. Awesome. So tell us what sparked your interest in the smart city space.
So I was doing a project in 2011 and 2012 called the BMW Guggenheim Lab. And it was a joint project between BMW and the Guggenheim in New York. And we were traveling around the world. So in New York, Berlin and Mumbai, talking about cities of the future. And kind of quite a lot of that was really about smart cities. We didn't use that label specifically, but how we would interact and use resources and live in our cities in the future. And that's where my interest in, I guess, doing things differently, doing things in a smarter way, was really sparked, because we were working with people from like MIT, and various kind of academic institutes and car companies and corporations around the world. So I was really exposed to people doing things in a different way to how we're doing them here in Queensland.
Cool. So what is a smart city to you?
Smart city, that's really hard, I reckon, because it's kind of like sustainability. People don't really know what it means. But I think a smart city is where we use technology and thinking, so our own brains, to do things more effectively. And my kind of best example, or how I kind of explain this to myself and to other people, is it would be like having a sensor in your wheelie bin. So rather than the council coming around to collect your rubbish or your recycling every week, that the sensor knows when the bin is full or when most bins in your street are full, and then the garbage truck comes around and picks up the rubbish, rather than just going around just because that's what we've always done. So I guess really it's about not doing what we've always done just because that's what we've always done, but doing things in a, or using our brains and using technology to do things in a smarter or a more efficient or more effective way, so that we get the same outcome, but we get a better outcome than what we're, than the outcome that we've got now, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So not doing things the way we've always done them, doing them a bit more intentionally, and then hopefully we can get a better outcome.
Yeah. I like that word, intentionally, actually. That's really good. Yeah.
Cool. I actually stole that from Colin Wright.
Okay, that's it. Well, you're just borrowing it.
Yes, that's right.
I'm borrowing it, yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, let's talk about why this concept is so important. What are your thoughts?
Oh, this is really, really important, because we're not going to have the money all the resources that we have now into the future. So, and actually a really good example that I always use to start this kind of conversation is when we were in Berlin doing the BMW Guggenheim Lab, we had this day about shopping and sharing and kind of what would shops and retail be like in the future. And obviously retail, as much as people just go and buy stuff, it's also a leisure activity. So we went to this share shop and it was run by this guy who was like an anti-capitalist. And he had one room which was just free stuff. So you could go and there was clothes and books and some homewares. And then the other two rooms were full of things like electric keyboards and dining room chairs. And there was some gardening stuff and yoga mats. And you could just like a library, but a library of stuff. You could go and borrow stuff. And so we took this big group and people went in there and people were like, oh, it's not set out very nicely, you know, because people's expectation is, you know, that any shop or any like op shop or sharing would look like David Jones or Maya. And so these people were like, oh, it's a bit untidy and it's not like really sexy and cool. And this lady turned around and she said, but we have to learn to do things differently. Because when there's a disaster or we're in a crisis, we won't have time to learn. And that's just resonated with me and I carry that with me all the time. And I guess we don't know what's going to happen in the future. So, you know, we've got the gig economy where people might only be working part time or people might be on 0 hours contracts, which means then for like governments and councils that people won't be paying as much tax. So there's not going to be so much money around in the future for everyone. Obviously, potentially, the rich are going to get richer, the poor are going to get poorer. And we'll have to have more, I guess, austerity measures in our cities and in our governments and in our councils. And we're seeing that already. And this isn't all bad news. The smart city means that we can do what we're doing now, but we're just doing it in a more effective way. You know, it's like, why does every house and every suburb have a lawnmower to cut their grass? Why don't we share? And I guess this, for me, it's all about just using and managing our resources more effectively, as you said, with intent.
Mm, yeah, cool. That kind of leads on to this next question. Obviously, you've experienced what people are doing overseas in those three cities. Keen to hear how you think Australia is embracing the smart city concept.
I reckon, without sounding like negative, I think if you stop the average person in the street and ask what a smart city is, I don't think they would know. And so I think there's a real piece there about what is a smart city and explaining it. So, and there's some really cool stuff happening. And there's some really simple stuff that people would understand, you know, like having maybe smart street lighting. Or, you know, it might be that, you know, as you walk down the street in the suburb, rather than the streetlights being on all the time, that there's like sensors that say the streetlights come on. But in some streets, they probably go off at night. But then if you're walking home late at night, you want the streetlights on. So wouldn't it be cool if there was like a sensor that picked up when people were walking down the street and then the streetlights came on at 2 o'clock in the morning, just while you're walking down that bit of street and then they go off again? That for me is a smart city. So we're not using energy all the time when it's not being used, but when we need it, the resource that we want is there. And the same with like the bins. There's no need for them to come around and pick up my rubbish every week, because now everyone's trying to reduce their plastic and shop more consciously. You know, they've got no plastic bags now. So wouldn't it be cool if the rubbish people only came and picked up the rubbish when it was really needed or on a less regular basis?
Mm. So it's about using the resources we have now more efficiently, effectively.
Yeah, and also using our technology. So everyone's got like a mobile phone, a smartphone, most people have got like iPads, and we could be all combining all of the stuff that we're carrying. We're carrying around that amazing resource in our bits or handbags all the time. And wouldn't it be good if we were using that more to actually build on us? Probably most people only use like 10% of what's on there. On a smartphone anyway, wouldn't it be good if we were using it for good, I guess?
Mm, cool. Well, I'm really interested for you to tell us about some of the projects and things you're working on right now.
Oh, so I've actually just started a new job, so I'm not actually working on any actual projects. It's my first week, But I have been working, doing some stuff, with the bus industry. So again, with them, really looking at how you could do things in an alternative way. So, one thing might be, for example, you know, every organization has got a bus depot, but wouldn't it be good if maybe we use like a park and ride, which again is only used in kind of like normal working hours and at night time they're pretty much empty, that rather than using like a bus depot or having buses dead running to the bus depot, that they could be used, they could be utilizing park and ride sites because they're like empty all night. And again, it goes back to that using the resources that we've all got like an iPhone or a smartphone, and most people have got technology in their car, but when you, it could be that cars are parked and there's some kind of app on your phone or in your car, that when people leave the park and ride, the park and ride would know that there were no cars there and then the bus could go in. So all of those kind of things where we're just connecting the resources that we've got and then using that to be able to use the facilities or the infrastructure more effectively, and then as a result saving money for the public sector and individual citizens as well.
Cool. I really am keen to hear about your underspent book/project. Tell us all about it.
So I didn't buy anything new or secondhand in 2014 and saved 38% of my salary. And this kind of also started through doing that project that I was talking about with the Guggenheim. So we'd been in New York and Berlin, where then in like 2011-12, the sharing economy or the circular economy was much more prevalent and much more talked about than it was here in Australia. And so I got invited to this dinner party in Berlin, and I was asked to take an apple crumble for like 20 odd people. So, and I was just living in like a little studio apartment, which was the size of most people's junk cupboard in Australia. It was really tiny. It was really nice. And it had like, you know, like two cups, two plates, two knives, two forks. And I was like, well, you know, it was like kind of like late evening, and I was thinking, what am I going to do? I need to make this apple crumble. So I just went down to this cafe. I lived in a big apartment block that had some, like a cafe and shop and stuff downstairs. And I went down to the guy in the cafe, and in a bit of a mixture of English and German, I was like, I'm going to this dinner party. I haven't got any stuff to make this crumble. And he was said to me, just go out into the kitchen and take whatever you need and bring it back when you're finished with it. And, you know, imagine going into like a restaurant or a cafe in Brisbane or Sydney or Melbourne and asking if you could borrow their stuff. I mean, people just wouldn't do it because that's just not the cultural norm here and not a social norm either. So I baked my apple crumble, and when I finished, I took the stuff back to him. And I didn't really think that much more about it other than, oh, that was a really cool thing. And, you know, in Berlin, everyone is kind of more the way towards kind of anti-capitalism and not buying stuff that you don't need and really into being out in the public space and doing things rather than the kind of culture that we see in other Western countries where people stay in their own home or their own backyards and probably don't participate as much in public events. And then I was traveling to Mumbai, and I read this article about a family in New Farm who'd only bought things from secondhand shops for a year. And I thought, oh, you know, that's kind of good. It's admirable. But they bought loads of stuff. And I was like, well, that's almost, if you're just buying it because it's in an op shop, you're almost buying excessively just because it is secondhand, which kind of defeats the whole object of, you know, not buying stuff. So then we went to Mumbai and we were exposed to some of the most, deprived slums in the world. And, you know, when you go there, you really see how people really value the resources that they've got, and no one wastes anything. They can't afford to. They're, you know, kids are out there picking up plastic that can be used, or they can be sold to someone else who can, you know, melt it down, and someone else can then buy it and make it into something else. And I just thought, wow, these people really value what they've got. They haven't got much, but they really, really value it. And they really work together as a community. So people, you know, one person's making the poppadoms and someone's helping someone else do something else and someone else is looking after this. And they really work together as a community. And it's like, wow, we just don't ask people to help or to do so much because we don't have to. People can afford to go and buy everything that they need and want. So then I went to the UK and it was Christmas and I was in London with my mom on Oxford Street and people were literally buying like the world was going to end and everyone was out trying to buy the perfect gift for the person who's got everything. And it was just such a contrast from there you are in Mumbai, the people who really value stuff, and then you're in London and there's all these people buying with excess. And so just from nowhere, I have made myself this New Year's resolution that I wasn't going to buy anything new or secondhand for a year. So quite a long story, but really just shows when you kind of look at what other cultures and other countries are doing and how people value or don't value stuff, that you can make a real kind of, you can have a lifestyle experiment, but it's about real kind of lifestyle and behavior change.
Yeah, definitely. And I really interested. We've had a conversation recently about the huge impact on our cities that this overconsumption and everything is having, and how the smart city concept can really kind of help us to think in a different way, to use our resources more efficiently and effectively, and to just break those habits of the way we've always done things. So I think it's a real, like, there's so many crossovers with what you've done with Underspent and then also how we can kind of bring that concept to the city or the community or the regional place.
And it might be that, you know, the shopping centre of the future, you know, has like a smart city shop. And in the beginning, you know, while we're trying to empower and inform people what the smart city is, that it might be there's some kind of like technology or app that says these are all of these things, you know, this is where all the lawnmowers are. And actually, rather than going and buying one, that you borrow, and there's some kind of credit for people when they lend out their lawnmower. I don't know quite how this would work, but there's going to be someone smarter than me who can use technology and can harness where all these resources are. And it's almost just like marrying up where the resources are and where the need is and where the want is, and kind of using technology and kind of smart cities concepts to bring all that together and then have that central place. But I mean, it has to be about trust as well. Like, trust is really important. And because people say, oh, I don't want to share my stuff or lend, because what about if it gets broken? So, you know, one part of the smart cities is about trusting the data, or to, as in you're giving data away or making it available. And then that trusting in the kind of sharing and making things smarter or using resources in a kind of collaborative way.
Mm. Well, that leads perfectly onto our next question, which is how can we better integrate across, you know, the different disciplines, governments, community, industry? What are your thoughts on that?
I reckon the first thing is to have conversation. When I wrote my decongestion book, my first book about how to cut traffic congestion without building new roads. And then through the Underspent, it's about really going out and having conversations with people and listening. And because I think it's easy to make assumptions and say, oh, that won't work, or people, if we do this over here, people will use it, or if we don't do this, people won't do this, or people should do this. And I think it's really about going out and really understanding the kind of drivers that encourage and enable people to change their behaviour, and what triggers them not changing or not getting involved in things. And then just really listening to what people want, because it's easy to sit in a council or a government or a consultancy and say, oh, we'll do this and everyone will do it. It's like taking, you know, like, oh, we'll build infrastructure and then everyone's going to go and buy a bike and ride their bike forever and sell their car. And it would be great if it was that simple, but it's not. And so I think it's really about actually going out and explaining what a smart city is and or could be, and really understanding, well, where would people want to make their community or their city or their country smarter in the smart city, smarter way?
Yeah, definitely cool. I'm really keen to hear what you think the emerging trends are that people aren't talking about enough.
Oh, wow. Now that's quite a hard one. I probably think that in the kind of transport sector, obviously people are talking about automated vehicles. Again, does the average person think it's going to, it's really going to happen, or when will it happen? I think retail is a really big one. So, and actually I walked into the train station on Monday morning and I saw one of those Star Trek Express, you know, one of the courier delivery vans driving around, and it's about a kilometre and a half from my house to the train station that I use. And the guy was just like kind of following me on all the streets and stopping everywhere. And I just thought, wow, that's a real change that now, you know, people would have gone to the shopping centre on a Saturday, but now clearly people are buying things online, and they were, and all of his parcels were quite small parcels, like small boxes or those bags. So it was probably like clothing or stuff that you would buy if you went to Westfield Shopping Centre, I guess. And so people now are staying at home. This is an assumption. Again, you've got to go out and speak to people and understand. But so that kind of behaviour where people used to go to shopping centre on a Saturday afternoon, now potentially people are doing more online shopping over the weekends at home, and then they're getting stuff delivered at the beginning of the week. Or maybe they did their online shopping on Sunday night and then it arrives on Monday morning. But I just thought, wow. And he must have done about 20 drop-offs in that kilometre and a half that I saw him. And I actually only live about, from my house, it's only like a 10-minute walk to shopping centre, to Tyndall Shopping Centre. So that just shows that even people who live within walking distance of the shopping centre are now actually choosing to do more online shopping, and retail could potentially really change. And I don't think that's something, and still we're planning the city where everyone will make their trips by private car or by public transport to the shopping centre, or come into, like, you know, Brisbane CBD or Sydney CBD to do their kind of high-end shopping as well. So I think that's something that no one's really talking about at all. And I think the other thing that I really see changing is, but very slowly, is food. So, you know, people like Food Connect in Southeast Queensland, you know, crowdfunding to buy their warehouse so they can be a community hub between all the local producers and farmers and the community. You know, 5-10 years ago, would we have expected a social enterprise to actually be changing the spectrum, so to speak, of food distribution and food purchase in Southeast Queensland? I don't think so. So yeah, and you know, they could, people could participate in that crowdfunding from anywhere in the world, is my understanding. So, you know, that's a huge change. There's some really exciting times ahead.
Yeah, I think that behavioural change aspect is maybe not being talked about enough, particularly within planning and transport and those type of things. And the only way you get that information is, you know, through quantitative and qualitative data. So you need to go out and talk to people and, you know, observe.
Yeah, and another thing that is starting to ramp up here in Australia, but, you know, my family are in the UK, and my mum and dad live down in the southwest in an agricultural area, and nearly every farmer, and obviously the farms in the UK are smaller, you know, like an average farm where I come from, is like about 100 acres in size, and that's a very productive farm size, because obviously you haven't got droughts and floods and things there. But, you know, every farmer has given over a field or two fields for solar farms. So now you just, you know, you drive along the roads and there's just, you know, fields and fields of solar. And, you know, and the sun doesn't shine that much in the UK. So, you know, that's something that we've not, you don't see that here where, you know, roofs and roofs are just covered in solar panels, in the way that they've really embraced solar in the UK. And that can change everything. And that makes the city much smarter. You know, my mum and dad have had solar on their house for, I don't know, about 6 or 7 years, and they have changed their behaviour slightly, where my mum puts the dishwasher on at lunchtime now, not in the evening, and she would do washing, you know, put washing in the machine in the morning rather than just at any time. And they don't pay any electric bills. So, you know, we haven't really seen that huge explosion in solar here. So I think that's, again, something that people haven't talked about so much.
Yeah. Cool. Well, it's been so awesome to chat with you. I really just have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
Oh, so they can look me up on my website, which is cyclingrachelsmith.com. And then on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as CyclingRSmith, and then on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. That's so cool. And I see you doing a weekly blog on my LinkedIn.
I am. And I think that's a really important take home, really, for like anyone in smart cities. I found that doing a blog every Monday, I post it out every Monday night, has really, it's about consistency and giving information that adds value to people's lives. But actually, by writing a blog, I used to just do them whenever I felt like doing it. But when you actually blog consistently, that's when you really build an audience or a tribe or a community, whatever you want to call it. And people really start getting interested in your subject matter or what you're talking about. When it's just like, oh, yeah, I haven't got time this week, or I might do it 3 blogs in 1 month and just one the next. You don't have that consistency where when you are being consistent, you really build the traction and people start engaging in the conversation.
And I think, yeah, that's so relevant to the smart city space, particularly at this stage in Australia where we are just trying to educate the everyday person on what it means and what it can mean for them and what, you know, what's happening in the space. So,
yeah. So I'd say to anyone who's interested in this or working in this or wants to work in this is just really go out and ask people, listen to people, and then just share your findings or share your thoughts or your own experiences in like a weekly blog or a podcast. I do the blog because it's easier, or it's easier for me. I think that is the real key to success. And I think people want to do things that are too hard in the beginning, and it's that real simple thing, maybe 200 or 300 words every week.
Cool. It's been awesome to chat with you, and I really look forward to talking to you again and seeing what we can do together, some awesome stuff we can do together. Yeah. So thanks for coming on.
Cool. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Rachel. Talk soon.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at Smart City Pod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.